The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here. Today
FM. I alone can fix it. Who would have the arrogance to say something like that? I suppose you'd have to be a very stable genius, wouldn't you? Do you remember the book A Very Stable Genius? We had its authors Carol Leonig and Philip Rucker with us at the time, but they're back with a new book on Donald Trump's final year in office called I Alone Can Fix It. Carol and Philip, thank you very much for being with us. Carol, can I start by asking you, where did this expression, I alone can fix it, come from?
Well, it seems like ancient history now, Matt, but in 2016, when Donald Trump was campaigning for president, and many considered him a long shot, an outlier, a non-traditional Republican candidate, he was successful in tapping a community in the United States that felt pretty left alone and beleaguered and stressed out about the way the country was headed. And he said he would be their defender. And in the campaign rallies that he went to, he said, you know, I know the system better than anyone, and that's why I alone can fix it.
And was it something that he ever repeated during 2020 in the depths of the crisis caused by the COVID catastrophe?
It's something he's said in different versions, not exactly those words, but he certainly said a version of that over and over again, that he's the best person to govern this country, the best person to solve our big, big problems at the border, with crime rising in some communities. And of course, his view that he did a wonderful job in responding to a lethal pandemic that marched across the world, the globe, and killed hundreds of thousands of Americans.
Philip, does he genuinely believe that he did a wonderful job in dealing with the pandemic?
He does. When Carol and I sat down with former President Trump this spring for a lengthy interview for our book, he said he had no regrets about how he handled the coronavirus pandemic, and in fact said he thought he had done an excellent job and complained that he hadn't received enough credit from the media and from some of his political opponents for the work he did. Now, he does deserve some credit for speeding up the development and research and ultimately the distribution of the vaccines here in the United States. But apart from that, you know, most of the people who served with Trump would say that he was really more of a failure in how he handled the pandemic.
But deep down, do you think, does he realize he made mistakes and got things wrong, but is just of the type of character who would never admit it publicly? Or is it that his sort of vanity is such is that he doesn't believe himself to be capable of making mistakes?
I have to say it's probably the latter. His vanity is unlike any we see in most people, and he has an incredible ego and confidence in his own abilities and his own supremacy. And I don't think he allows himself to even entertain the thought that he may have made a mistake.
Carol, the book is extraordinarily detailed as a result of the enormous amount of interviews that you have done with people right at the centre of Trump during that particular year. And it's very clear, and I suppose we knew this as well, about how much he values strength, and is creating the impression of being strong all the time is important to him. And he seems to judge people in his orbit as to whether they're strong or weak. But could it be that at key times himself, even if he didn't realise it, he turned out to be weak?
Wow, that's a very insightful thought, and I am struck by it because, you know, the two guiding principles that Phil and I learned about Donald Trump's presidency, both in our first book and even more so in the second, the two principles that pushed him, motivated him, were one, his ego, making sure that he was viewed as supreme, and looking strong was part of that. And the second was political gain. Everything was about whether or not he was winning. As for whether or not he himself was weak, one of the ways in which he harmed the country, according to numerous people that we interviewed and who served at his shoulder throughout 2020, one of the ways that he failed the country was because of his incessant need to look strong, to appear to be the the victor, and that hurt the country so many times. So you could say, I think it's reasonable to say, that his weakest spot was his inability to be empathetic to the country, to care more about the country than his own grip on power.
It struck me particularly, though, his behavior on January 6th this year during the insurrection on Capitol Hill, that he spent much of the day just following events on television rather than maybe pushing through as other potential dictators might have done in other countries to try and take advantage of what was happening or been strong enough to stop it, that he almost was weak and paralyzed by fear as to what to actually do. What do you think of his behavior on that particular day, Carol?
You know, we were stunned to learn the gleefulness and the giddiness that he was described as experiencing as he watched his rally supporters, the people he had just spoken to at the Ellipse, charging up the Capitol onto, that the grounds of that Democratic icon. He was watching television sort of with his mouth open and excited and happy about the fact that his followers were taking it to the lawmakers, so to speak. They were doing what he asked them to do, to rally against the certification of the election. And strikingly, he also had to be persuaded for 2 hours running what to say to those followers to stop the violence. When violence broke out, when shots were fired, and that's a little bit after 2:20 p.m. that day, the president at the time believed, oh no, this doesn't look so good. Of course, it didn't propel him into action. Most presidents, would take some action when violence is happening, seven blocks from their home at the White House. They would do something. They would say something. He was silent. He was MIA. And it took his daughter and Ivanka Trump and his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, again, 2 hours working along with aides to try to persuade him to record a message that would be sufficient to usher people off of that hill, to stop committing crimes, the crimes of everything from trespassing to attacking police officers, because he wasn't really eager to do anything, eager to offend his base.
But Philip, did he ever consider, from what you've learned, as to whether he could use the military and the police to his own advantage on that particular day, given that he was obsessed with the idea of persuading Vice President Mike Pence not to ratify the election results? He was hoping to remain in power. A dictatorial type might have actually thought of using the military and the police to support the rioters rather than quelling what was happening. If he had been the strongman figure that he saw himself as, might that not have been his opportunity? Or had he realised that the military simply would not support him in that way?
Well, it certainly would be an act of a strong man to try to use the military to support in that endeavor to overturn the election results. Carol and I don't have any reporting to suggest that Trump actually entertained that notion or contemplated it or intended to take those steps. And I think were he to propose it or try to take that action, he would have been thwarted by the leaders at the Pentagon. There was a concerted effort by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the other heads of the different branches of the armed services in the United States to make sure that the military was never used for a political purpose.
And that's like why that. I asked the question, because yeah. General Mark Milley comes across particularly as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff as a very important figure, didn't he, in the latter stages of Trump's presidency?
That's exactly right. He saw himself as sort of a bulwark, protecting the integrity of America's democracy against what he thought was a dangerous and legitimate, incredible threat posed by the president. He actually feared that Trump could try to conduct a coup in order to stay in power despite the election results, and was sealed for that possibility. It didn't end up happening, but it was certainly a very real and credible threat for Milley and for the other leaders at the Pentagon.
Carol, there's many extraordinary details in this book, but one really leapt out at me from the interview that you and Philip conducted with Trump in Mar-a-Lago, in which he claimed that if two of America's greatest presidents had come back from the dead, they could not have defeated him before COVID struck. He said, I think it would be hard if George Washington came back from the dead and he chose Abraham Lincoln as his vice president. I think it would have been very hard for them to beat me. When he said that to you, what was his demeanor? How did you react?
It is a sort of a stunning thing to say. And there were a couple of moments in the interview when former President Trump emphasized to us that he wasn't trying to be braggadocious. He was just trying to be truthful. And in this case, he seemed entirely persuaded and had no signs of deception, no signs of shambling or dissembling. He seems to believe that he had an excellent, exemplary model presidency. And it may be that he, in the last several weeks of his presidency, he's surrounded by people who repeated that to him over and over again and closed the door to trusted longtime advisors who tried to tell him the straight truth, who tried to give him some tough love. Those people were silenced in the chambers of Donald Trump's exile. Only flatterers are welcome. However, I will say that there's one interesting thing Phil and I learned at Mar-a-Lago about the president. And, you know, we are trained observers. We are trained mini detectives in a sense that we're trying to look for signs that people are misleading us. And Donald Trump gives no signs of deception. He seems from stem to stern to believe what he's saying. And either he's very good at convincing himself or he's very good at hiding that he's lying.
To finish, Philip, you conducted hundreds of interviews for this book, some which went on for hours and hours, of people very much in Trump's inner circle, what we might call enablers. Why did they enable Trump? Was it because they were genuine believers, or was it because they felt that by remaining within his orbit, they could perhaps mitigate some of the damage he was doing?
You know, there were multiple reasons, and there's no particular, single explanation that all of these people share. They all have their own personal motivations, but some were true believers in his agenda, in his ideology. Many more, you know, liked the power. They you know, are ambitious people in politics and wanted to serve at a high level in government, and this was their opportunity. And many more still felt like if they weren't there, somebody worse would have their job. And so they were helping to some degree protect what they saw as the important values for this country in remaining in those jobs and figuring out a way to sort of manage and mitigate the president's impulses.
Carol Leonig and Philip Rucker, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word of Today FM. It's a terrific read. The book is called I Alone Can Fix It.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.